the first six verses of Proverbs. Just in general, the first verse tells us the author. The second and third verse tells us the purpose of the book. The fourth and fifth verse tells us for whom the book was written, which is basically everybody, when we'll see. And the sixth verse is the style in which it was written. So these six verses represent an introduction to all of Proverbs. Okay? Now, there are two questions that we have on the first verse, namely the author. The first thing is, why should we care who the author is altogether? I mean, let's read the book. Let's see what the man has to say. Either he has something intelligent to say or he doesn't have. That's the first thing. And second thing is, in Ecclesiastes, it also says that these are the Proverbs of Solomon. Oh, over here in Proverbs, it says these are the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. And over there also it elaborates pretty much in Ecclesiastes. But however, in the Song of Songs, he says Song of Songs to Solomon. That's it. Doesn't go into all detail. Question is, why the difference? So that is the two questions which we have to ask on the first verse. All right. Now, the thing is, there are two opinions in education. One opinion in education is that you should read as anything. Anything you read is good, as long as you read, right? There's a second opinion in education, no, that there's certain things that are you could gain much more if you know what it has to say and what it's talking about, and you know that there's wisdom in the book. So the thing is that the reason why they're telling us the author is to tell us that, first of all, this is Solomon, right? First, they're telling us he's the son of David. He's the son of a very wise king, and he had all this knowledge to gain from him. And he himself is the king of Israel, which was also a very, very wise nation. And so, therefore, it is worth reading this book, you see. So this book was introduced with Solomon, with King Solomon, as to tell us his credentials, that he has something to offer us, you see. The same thing in Ecclesiastes, which is a slightly different book, which deals more openly with philosophy, so there he also gave his credentials. But however, by the time he came to his third book, everybody knew him, so that he didn't have to, like a person that gives a lecture every week he doesn't have to give his credentials, he's already known. But the purpose of the first verse is to teach us that you should be selective in the type of books you read, to make sure that that it's somebody of intelligence, that there is something to gain, and not just reading anything, because not everything has something to offer. That is the first verse. Are there any questions on that? All right. Now, the next two verses is the purpose of the book. And the first thing he says is to know wisdom and mussar. I'll explain mussar in a minute. I'm going to use the Hebrew word, and I will give it a definition in a minute. And to understand the words of knowledge or understanding, again, I'll give a definition. We'll define each of these terms here to know exactly what this book has to offer. Okay. Now, the first thing is that in Judaism, we hold that the main important thing in relating to God, and anything that you, in any development of the human being, comes through the intellect. And therefore, the main important thing that we want to give you is a scientific method of thinking. And therefore, the word chachma, which is translated to wisdom, is sometimes translated wisdom, and sometimes it's translated as a science, you see? And the main important thing that this book has to teach you is to train you in the scientific method of thinking. That is the first thing that this book will give you. Okay, that's the first purpose. And the second thing, Mussar is the, see, to train a person to think correctly, you must have a certain subject. You can't just abstractly tell them how to think. It's like telling a carpenter how to be a carpenter without a saw and a hammer and something to do. It must be through guidance. So the subject with which he's going to teach you the scientific method is Mussar. What is Mussar? Mussar is the science of everyday life. And in other words, how to live correctly in your everyday life. And it incorporates two aspects. And to best to explain these two aspects, I'll take the idea of jealousy. There's one idea of jealousy, the emotional, and what is the psychological, to analyze the psychological and emotional causes of jealousy, to analyze that and how to deal with that. But then there's a certain view, how you view it. In other words, like when a person has jealousy, they have a certain philosophy of life. The jealous person looks at life with a certain philosophy. And that philosophy of jealousy is that I decide who deserves to have anything. In other words, like this. The jealous person says, well, that person doesn't deserve that house. How could they have such a house? Either I got to get a bigger one or I got to take that one away. But what you're saying is that person doesn't deserve what they have. Because either you should have it or they shouldn't have it, one of the two. That's the philosophy of the jealous person. So the thing is, there's a certain philosophy that people look at, you see, in everyday life, and that the book of Proverbs will help train you to view life in a correct manner and to undo these bad traits to have the correct view, so that, in other words, there are two aspects of everyday life that you have to deal with to act in life correctly. One is, first of all, you must have science to analyze it correctly. That was the first statement. Secondly, you must deal with your emotions and incorrect views of life. So therefore, it'll straighten out your views and it'll help you deal with your everyday traits based on the psychological. Okay, are there any questions on that so far? All right. Now, the next thing that the verse says, the next point that the verse says is Bina. Bina is understanding, and it's really a training of how to think. So the best way to explain this, I'll give you an illustration of how it works. Let's say, for instance, if I would ask you, what's the difference between hot and cold on one side and hard and soft on the other? What's the difference? Well, you'll just say, well, they're different. But the thing is, can we explain how they're different? Yes. Hot and cold measures temperature. Hard and soft measures density. So therefore, they are opposites. Every opposite must have a certain subject. And that's the way a person thinks. The person thinks in certain subjects and tries to define it through comparison or through opposites. And so, therefore, this book is made up of all different types of opposites. The way it's written, it shows the opposites, and what you have to do is find the subject and to define the nature of the opposites. I'll give you an illustration. Like, for instance, if I would ask, what's the difference between stingy and greedy? Now, usually that's a hard thing. Well, it's a hard thing to figure. The truth is that stingy is an opposite of spendthrift, while greedy has a different opposite, okay? So I have to ask you, what's the difference between greedy and its opposite and stingy and spendthrift? You see, stingy and spendthrift is measuring how a person spends money, the two opposites in how to spend money. while greedy and its opposites are how you acquire money. It's different, it's opposites in the acquisition of money. Now, if you go through the Proverbs, you will find that they constantly show the difference between the righteous and the wicked, and the wise and the fool. And so therefore, there's constantly in every verse, they usually show the difference, but you must understand what the difference is, but to truly, before you could truly understand, you have to find out the subject, which many times they don't say. So in an analysis of the verse itself, the way it was set up and the way it was written, the analysis of the verse itself will give you a training of how to think correctly that will help you not only in the science of everyday life, but it will help you in the science, in any science, because once your mind is trained, then you could apply it to all other sciences. That is the second verse. So the second verse is telling us the purpose. The third verse is also telling us the purpose, and it says, the third verse says, to accept the intelligent mussar. Okay, we'll explain that in a minute. And then it says, righteousness, justice, and equity. Okay, we'll explain all those, we'll define all the terms here. Now, intelligent mussar, there are two interpretations which both are worth viewing. The first one is by Malbim, who was a commentary, and he says, you see, the thing is, whenever you decide to do something, there's a certain framework and certain motivations that you are operating under. What motivates you? Now, if you would want to, most people, if they heard what we have to say here, so basically a person that's starting out would say the motivation that would drive them is, yeah, I want to make sure I have a good everyday life, and if I could learn the science of life, so then basically I could... I'll have a good life, so therefore it's worth it to have the good life, and so therefore I will study the science of life. So the motivation is a personal gain, what I could gain out of it. But however, there's another reason for living this life, because if I am a person, an intelligent person, so therefore I want to be guided by wisdom and science and understanding, you see. So my motivation becomes an intellectual one. So therefore what the book is going to, one of the purposes of the book, besides giving you a whole training of science and methodology and thinking, it also gives you a framework and it changes your framework. And it changes your motivation for what you do. You start out with a personal motivation of personal gain that, wow, hey, I could really gain a lot. If I really learn how to think this way, I could really be successful in my everyday life and learn how to avoid failure. So therefore, that becomes the motive. But however, what happens through the study of Proverbs, what happens is it changes your whole framework of operating, and the reason why you want to live this life, because you're drawn to the scientific view of life, to the idea of science, and that's the way you want to look at everything. Not only your everyday life, but everything you want to view through the eyes of science and knowledge. So therefore, it changes your motivation. That is according to one interpretation called the Malbim, of intelligent mussar. It changes the whole framework. However, there's another commentary that says that there is that when you study, see, when you're studying, there sometimes you study like sort of like a certain acceptance. Like you don't really discern in what you're really learning. And so therefore he tells you you should work it out rationally. The best way to explain this is that there was an interpreter called Sadyagon, and he wrote an introduction, a total introduction to Proverbs. And in that introduction, he gives the basic foundation of how what's the purpose of Proverbs. He says like this. He says that there are two basic drives in every human being. The two basic drives in every human being is the desire for pleasure and the avoidance of pain. This is the best. If you stop to think about a human being, you'll see throughout your life, I mean, you make a living, so you shouldn't starve. I mean, to avoid certain pains, and also to have a certain amount of pleasure that you could use the money for. And basically, if you look at throughout all your drives and everything else you do, it comes down to these basic instincts or drives in the human being that he wants pleasure, search for a desire for pleasure, and the avoidance of pain. But however, most people, when they do this, their decision is made based on the immediate, the now, the right now, the immediate. I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. I don't feel well, I'm going to take an aspirin. Okay? But however, there is an analysis to analyze the immediate action that you want to do versus the results or the effect or the consequences of those actions to measure. So therefore, let's say, for instance, I have a desire to smoke now. Now the question is it worth the consequences? Now what happens is the desire is a strong, powerful emotion. While when you investigate and measure it's in the future, you do not feel that now. So you have to understand to evaluate that which you have a strong emotion for right now versus an idea that in the future something might happen. So you have to evaluate your desires now versus the immediate desire and measure the consequences to see if it's worth happening. He says that's all of Proverbs. In other words, whenever we talk about the righteous side of the verse, and on the other side is the wicked side, or the wise person, and on the other side is the foolish person. So the thing is one side is the immediate desire, and the other side and the consequences what he'll get from it, and the other side is they recognize those consequences to carry out the immediate desire, and so therefore a certain sort should be put into it. So therefore, the thing is that once you put it on that level, on that way, so it answers an interesting question. Because the question is how does a person get his morals and ethics? If a person stops to think, how do I get my morals and ethics? The answer is, you got it from your family, you got it from your teachers, from your religion, from everybody besides yourself. You were raised with it. Your morals and ethics, basically, you were raised with. And so, therefore, who's right? I mean, you were raised with a different one than I, then who's right? Why are you more right than I? Or why am I more right than you? The answer is, as Sadyagon is saying, is that you should put it, all your morals and ethics and all your actions and everything you're dealing with on a rational level that you can evaluate. And so therefore, if we say don't be jealous, well, 1 minute, why shouldn't I be jealous? What's wrong? Let's say I am jealous. Is there anything wrong with it? Just because you were raised that something is wrong with jealousy, does that make it wrong? So therefore, you must stop to analyze, to be a thinker, and especially in this area where the strongest emotions are, where a person does it, I mean, like if we start pointing out all the different emotions and the ones that touch onto our most precious feelings and beliefs, suddenly are put into question, like, for instance, if I'm stingy or I'm a spendthrift, and all these things are put into on the table for questioning, so then there are powerful, powerful emotions, you know, in different touches on. So what Sadhya Gaur is saying, but still, Lord, you should always stop to investigate with the intellect to be able to measure every single one of your actions, you see. So therefore, when many times people accept they're raised the way they were raised or what religion they're in, they just accept. What you will get from Proverbs is to train you to not to just accept, but to investigate and to analyze and to think about, even in the very area of your personal everyday life, which basically is the way you were raised. Basically, we're going to investigate that. That is the interpretation of the Meiri and Sadhya Gaur that explains an intelligent Musa. So we said intelligent Musa has two possible meanings. One is the rational approach, that even the way you approach the subject, sometimes you approach it irrationally, and you don't know how to approach it, it'll teach you how to approach the subject. And the other interpretation, which we said was the first interpretation, was that there are two different frameworks, or two different motivations that motivate you to a subject, and this subject will affect your very motivation of life, what motivates you. You start out with the motivation of just self-gain, and then you come to a loftier and higher motive or framework, and that is just the desire for study, just because you want to live an intellectual life. And if you don't think in terms of the consequences. That is, that finishes that finishes half of verse 3. Now we have the three qualities that the Proverbs teaches us. And I'm not going to go in the order, okay? The second one, which in Hebrew is mishpat, which means literally justice, that is a person that lives by the letter of the law. What I mean is that, like, you know, they say, like some doctors, they go by the book. You mean you just stop and you analyze or you see it intellectually and you just go by the book? This is what the book says, and that's it. And that's it. You cannot see anything beyond that. That is the first thing that'll teach you. You must learn how to look at everyday life scientifically and rationally, how to look at it in everyday life according to the letter of the science. But that's not everything. The second one is called tzedek, which is the first term of the three. And that is that you can't, when a person does an action, you cannot always go according to the act, to the letter of the law, but you must also take in outside circumstances. You must also take in, when talking to somebody, your relationship to the person. What a parent could say to a child, and what a teacher could say to a child, what a friend could say to a child, to a friend, the friends, how they relate to each other. There are different circumstances, and there's different ways in the way you have to deal, and you can't always go according to the letter of the law. I'll give you a simple illustration. Now, many times our children, they keep doing certain things wrong. Now, if you try to point out every single thing that they do wrong, and even though you might be right, the child is going to say, oh, they're just picking on me. Now, once they feel that you're picking, then anything you say, they're not going to accept. So what has to be is that you have to recognize the circumstance that sometimes you have to evaluate that I can't go according to the letter of the law with dealing with my child, but I have to see how far I could push and how much I could reprimand. Sometimes there's certain things better left alone, let him live the mistake, but there's certain things that are more important. I have to have my priorities. At least then they'll listen. But however, if you go too far, so then it's going to be turned off altogether. So the letter of the law would mean going according to each action and how to deal with every single point in the law. You'll have to deal with every single point. But however, an intelligent person will say, just for a minute, there are certain circumstances which I have to deal with in a different manner. Do you want to turn over this tape? No? Okay. The third one is Meshurim. That's being straight. Okay? This has to do with the mind. Okay? And that is this. The first thing that a person has to see life, to look at life correctly, is you have to be trained to think logically. That's the first step. So that's the first step that you have to do. Then secondly is you have to remove your prejudices in certain areas of life. So therefore, the way that you remove your prejudices to make this, that you should make correct decisions, is that you have to start dealing, like we said, with the different emotions and undoing the different emotions. Like, let's say, for instance, I have to make a decision based in an area of that I have a very strong emotion. So then when I look at the when I try to analyze it, my prejudices are going to make me look at it in an irrational manner, even though I'm looking at it rationally, but it's going to force me to look at it in an irrational manner. It's so that I won't be able to make a correct decision, and my natural intuition, which should be working to see a thing clearly and guide me clearly, is going to guide me just the opposite way, because the emotion will definitely interfere with my intuitive factor at looking at the subject. So the thing is that this book will help you to remove these prejudices. That's what Musa is for. Musa, the science of life, we said there's two parts. It's your view and your emotions and the traits that you have. Those traits that affect your thinking process, it'll help you take away, so that when you look at things, you'll look at it in a clear, very clear manner. So you'll have, so it trains you to think correctly, it trains you to think, to analyze things correctly, right? Then it trains your mind to, then you have to remove the prejudices that will affect these decisions. And I believe under here is one more decision, one more part that it helps you with, and that the best way to explain it is the story of King Solomon with the two women that they were starving. One child died, and they took the other child, and each one said that it's mine, and they came to King Solomon. And if you remember the story, King Solomon says, well, let's cut him in half. And the real mother says, no, give it to the other woman. And the other one says, no, dear, do it, cut it in half. King Solomon said who the right woman, who the mother was. And he became very well known for his great wisdom. And the question is, what is the nature of that wisdom that he had there? And the answer is that what I believe the quality is, what King Solomon had, was the quality of observance, to be able to observe. I believe before he even gave the test, King Solomon knew who was the mother and who wasn't, because he was able to read little nuances. He was able to observe and know how to pick out each little point. It's not like when we see a person, like somehow overall we see a person. He had the ability when talking to a person, what the person said, everything he said, and the way they said, every nuance. He was very, very observant to pick out every single point. And that's what a scientist has to be, very, very observant.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
We need to change the tape.
Okay.
You're doing well. We're hanging right in there with you.
That is correct. But also what we're saying is that it has to make sense
right.
to the mind, that the mind should be able to intellectually also see it once he... It's true that Torah would actually point out the... Like over here, like Proverbs, will point out all these things, but not to accept it just without thinking about it, but to understand and clear to the mind to make sure that it is clear. Like you actually see, like by Abraham and Moses, they actually argue with God.
Right.
Now that's not right to argue with God. But however, they had to question to get clarity in what they didn't understand. So therefore, the questioning and the analysis makes it clear to the mind. And that's what we're talking about, that there's a certain justice which is the letter of the law. And when we talk about the letter of the law, I'm not talking so much about halacha, the Jewish law. What I'm talking about is making decisions in everyday life and where you have to gain the wisdom from Proverbs, but then the particulars are so many that you have to sometimes learn the method from Proverbs and apply it to everyday life. So therefore, that was the first two. Well, this one is that to make decisions in the training of the mind, to be clear-headed, that in other words, straight, that is meshurim. The word yosher is really straight, to be straight. So therefore, what we said is you need three things. One is to train yourself logically. Two, to remove the prejudices. And the third is to be observant. What King Solomon, the first thing is the greatness of King Solomon is that he was observant of these two women, and he was able to recognize who was right and who was wrong. Then it was just a matter of setting up a test and to set up a situation that would show it publicly that everybody could see. But I believe he already knew beforehand, because if you're really observant, you could really tell, you could really recognize what is going on around you. You could read people and understand people in a very, very clear way. And when we're talking about observant, right now I'm only putting it in the framework of Proverbs where you're going to deal with people. But however, in every science, whenever you're going to make decisions about science and understanding, you have to be observant to separate the different components. Many times we don't recognize that there are different components. You just accept it as an overall picture. But however, the training that Proverbs will give you in this particular science is to be very observant and to be able, with your observance, to separate the different aspects, so to be able to do a good analysis. These two verses, and what we said, is basically everything, the whole purpose of Proverbs, and what it will give you. Now the question is, for whom was Proverbs written? Okay? Now, in the English it says here, to give to the simple prudence, to the youth knowledge and discretion. Okay. By the simple, what he means by the simple, he means a person who's intellectually naive. When he listens to a person give a lecture, so he listens and it sounds nice. So he accepts. He's intellectually naive. He listens to different philosophies, different people talking, and basically they just, it sounds good, that sounds nice. You see, and if he hears the opposite, he could also say that sounds nice. So to remove that, we give him armor. Armor, that prudence, is the opposite of that, where you question and analyze everything that comes before you. In other words, there was a commentary, the Meiri, and he says whenever you hear an idea, you should analyze, you should start questioning that idea, that it should look as if you desire to break it down, like as if you're out to destroy the idea. He says, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is that that's the only way of really testing out an idea. An idea is only in the mind. So how do you test it out? The only way to test it out is through questioning. Like, for instance, if we look back in the United States, their education, I mean, they experiment with students in different methods of education that could have been tested out through questioning, and they could have seen through the arguments with the mind that you didn't have to ruin whole generations of students with these type of methods. We could have seen they're harmful. But however, they experimented, and therefore it was very harmful. And therefore, a person cannot just say, oh, it sounds nice. They have to learn to question. And that is the intellectual naivete that a person has will not allow him to say, yeah, it sounds good. That person is intelligent. He must know what he's talking about. You must always ask. You must always question and say, just, you must train yourself to question. And that is what Proverbs, again, will give you. That's the person that that's one of the people he's talking to. The Pessy or the simple person is really a beginner in his studies. He has nothing. He has no background at all. He doesn't even know the question. That is the first person that it is written for. For the very beginner, it is the basic training for all beginners in to question and not to just accept, not to have that intellectual naivete. And the second one is the youth. The youth, see, youth is, he's young in knowledge. That's what it means, youth. Doesn't have to mean in age. In other words, he knows the question, but however, he doesn't have either the basic foundations of knowledge or some basic facts in knowledge. He doesn't have how to, he knows the question, but he doesn't know how to get into the subject and how to work with the subject and to get the basic foundations. In any subject, you have to have certain premises, certain basics, certain start. So he says he'll teach you the basic foundations of thinking, the basic foundations of the study of this science called Musar. And he'll also give you what he will give the youth is he'll give the youth discretion. Discretion is just a further development beyond the basics. In other words, he's going to start out first. There's three stages in development. First, you have to understand if you accept every idea, then you don't know to look for anything new. You just accept, and you don't know how to check which is right and which is wrong and what not to accept. So the first thing you have to do is learn how to question. Don't be naive and accept things that you hear. You have to train yourself to question and even look for questions to test out any statement or any idea. That's the first thing. Then, well, once you have that, now you can begin studying. And the first thing that you have to study is the basic foundations of study. Basically, the basic foundations of study we've discussed in the second and third verse. So therefore, that's what will give them the basic foundation. But not only that, after you have the basic foundation, there's a further development of in-depth, of going into the very depths of the science and studying it in a very deep, like a scientific person. So that's the third thing that he will give you, which is the three stages of thought. One is questioning the basic foundation, and then to go in-depth in the whole subject. That is the first group of people that this book is written for. Okay, that was verse 4. In verse five, he says, now the wise will hear and will increase his information, and the man of understanding will obtain wise counsel. So now he's saying that a wise person can also gain knowledge. Okay? Now the thing is that but there are two types of wise people, okay? Now the first type of wise person What if it means he is wise? It means that he already, let's say he had a teacher that knows about life and taught him about science and taught him how to think and taught him how to look at life. So he has the basics. But however, he says, even though he might have gotten information from other people, from wise people, but don't underestimate what's in this book, and we could still open up whole new avenues for you, and also areas that you don't think fit into that world will open up for you. So if you, even though you already studied this science, don't think that you cannot gain. We're not going to teach you like we taught the people of verse 4, that they have no background, but we will continue giving you either a more scientific method or open up a whole new, all new aspects and areas of study. That's the first part of that verse. While the second part of the verse says that, the second part, understanding will obtain a wise counsel. Okay? Wise counsel. Now, the Hebrew comes from the word chevel, which means a rope. And one of the commentaries says that, sometimes you have a small rope, then you attach it to another, and you attach it to another, and then you get a whole string. He says, now, sometimes you have pieces of information that are separate, and you don't realize they're connected. And suddenly, this book, Proverbs, will teach you how to connect various aspects of knowledge from different areas that you have, and will train you to bring all this different knowledge to clarify it, to show how they come together. There was one time a thinker that I one time read, and he says that, if you could learn knowledge from one science, he says, but there's a great benefit in learning other sciences because it trains the mind. Even though really you use the same method, but from different angles you start bringing things together that you didn't notice. So therefore it'll teach you how to do this from different aspects, different pieces of knowledge that you have, from different areas you don't know they're connected, so bring much more bring a greater clarity to the idea when you see them all come together in one universal idea. So therefore he says that is also what I could teach the wise person. You say that even though he has knowledge already, but I can help him in further developing that knowledge to make greater universals. And the last verse is the style in which it was written. It says to understand a proverb in a sage sentence, the words of the wise and their riddles. Okay. Now a proverb, a proverb, the word mushel in Hebrew has different connotations, but basically what it is where the idea is not written out. In other words, like for instance, the stories of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they're really just stories. What happens is from the stories we abstract certain ideas. In Proverbs, what a proverb is, it gives a little illustration. And again, you have to abstract the idea from the case. It's very small, one small statement. He has the facts and information about one area. But you have to abstract the ideas, you see. So therefore, what he means by proverb is where you have a case or a metaphor or a history or stories, and you have to abstract the ideas. And the second one that he says are the ideas which you have abstracted. That's what he says. He says that to understand the proverb, that's like the story, to understand a proverb in a sage sentence. Okay? The sage sentence is the interpretation of the history or whatever you're studying at that time. It's the story form. However, the third one in the verse says the words of the wise. This is where the wise write their information out. Like if you read the Talmud, it says the facts and the ideas of the Talmud. Or if you read the ethics of the father, so there also it writes clearly what the ideas are. But even though it writes what the ideas are, you should realize that that doesn't finish the investigation. Usually there's a tremendous, a wise person is very precise in his writing. And so when he writes it very, very precisely, when he's writing precisely, so therefore when I read it, I have to know how to abstract the information from the wise person. So even though he's writing the statement clearly, he's not writing a proverb, he's not writing a story that I have to abstract, but he writes the true idea. This is the idea that you have to know. Still in all, since it's a wise person, you must do a tremendous investigation and analysis to understand that too. So therefore, he'll train you in one, the proverbs or stories, how to abstract the ideas. He'll teach you how to read from a wise person where they were very precise in their language. So he'll teach you how to read that and abstract and get the most out of that. And that's two styles of writing. And the third one is, how does he translate it here? He translates it here and there, just one second, if I have words of the wise, and they're riddles, right. Now, the thing is, by riddles, what he means by riddles is our sages wrote a book called Medrash, or people loosely translate legends. It's really not a legend. They were stories made up by our sages, which they knew were totally not true. But they wrote up a strange story, which its purpose was to hide the information from people who were not ready for that type of information. There are two reasons why a person is not ready for information. One reason why a person is not ready for information is because it's too abstract. He shouldn't read it. But this is very few. Most people realize when it's too abstract. But the real big problem is there's certain information that emotionally would be destructive to different types of people. And therefore, with that type of information that people, you have to develop. In other words, like we're talking about like when we were talking about before in the introduction, we were saying that there's certain ideas that run against your emotions. Let's say, for instance, if it runs so much against your emotions, it's going to turn you off or make you turn away or make you look at life or fight it off. Whatever it is, you have to know how far to go before a person is ready emotionally for a certain type of knowledge. So what our sages did, since they didn't want the knowledge to be lost, so they wrote it in a certain riddle. And when you're ready to understand that knowledge, you'll get the secret of the riddle. You'll know how to undo the riddle. But if you don't know how, if you're not ready for that information, you won't know the key. And you'll realize that you really don't know, you're not ready for it. So therefore, a superficial person, or what Proverbs calls the fool, sometimes they read these type of stories, strange stories, and they look at it like literally, you see? So that would be foolish. But however, the intelligent person recognizes the true value of these stories and realizes when he could understand the story, so then he'll be able to interpret it. If it's beyond his emotional scope or his intellectual scope, he'll realize that he's not getting any place and that the whole thing doesn't make sense. And he'll leave it for another time. Maybe he needs more knowledge to get back to get that key. That basically is the introduction. These six verses are the introduction of all of Proverbs, and starting with verse 7, that actually starts, doesn't exactly start the Proverbs, it does start the book. From here till the end of the ninth chapter, basically, He has sometimes a theme that runs either half a chapter or a whole chapter. The Proverbs actually begin with chapter 10, where there every verse is a totally different thing, and very rare that the two verses together have anything in common, and usually each verse is a separate idea to be analyzed separately from there on. So, but however, the introduction, namely the author, what we said before, the author and who, and the purpose of the book and who it's written for and its style, that we've just done in the first six verses. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to take them in the next few minutes.
Okay, I think you did well. That you give us some food for thought. And
the riddles
were the, he said, were the Midrash.
Said, well, wouldn't the riddles really be Kabbalah?
All right, the question here would be, would the riddles not also include the Kabbalah?
Kabbalah?
Yes.
That could be, if, yes, I guess it would include the Kabbalah also.
Okay. Well, that was one of the statements, because it, you know, the Kabbalah is written in heavy symbolisms and...
That's true.
And you have to get into all the typology, and that's a whole science within itself.
Right.
So that was it. Okay, any more questions on this end?
The thing is that if you do have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. You know, we have that discussion tape from our class here,
mm-hmm.
and any questions you would like to send, we'd, you know, we'd be glad to deal with it in
okay.
Discussion class. Either I can answer you personally or on the tape.
Okay. Well, I think you did well, and I appreciate you sharing your time with us, and I'm glad you've got our friends there with you also. And Miss Chait today said she's looking forward to you and your wife being in New Hampshire next week.
Right.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and good night to all.
Good night.